Good morning, this is Sally Richards, and we're in the garden once again. It's Thursday morning, 8:30, and the opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access our shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. And this is the In the Garden show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. And I'm Sally Richards, your DJ for the hour, and this week's topic, we are going to talk about personal plants for indoors, because this is we're taping this in December, and we're starting to think about our plants that maybe we can start growing indoors if you haven't got your winter garden in. So, and my guest is Deb Ringler from Personal Plant Service. Welcome, Deb.
Hi, how are you, Sally?
I'm great. So you own a business that actually, and if I haven't got this right, let me know, keeps plants growing indoors. Is that right? About right?
It's true. In our industry, we're called interior scapers or interior landscapers, which means we do pretty much everything you would do outside. We just bring it inside.
So are we talking about inside, like inside my house or inside buildings or?
Both. How about a good example of a large scale of that would be South Coast Plaza.
Oh.
You walk South Coast Plaza, I'm assuming with the bean holidays, you'll see that they have a lot of planters and large plants inside. So an interior landscape company would be the one that would be in charge of designing, installing, and maintaining that landscape.
Wow.
Now, I do a much smaller scale. I do residences and I do commercial buildings. So I do both. But most of my work is either containerized or interior landscape.
So I always wondered about that because, you know, you'd always see these really nice plants inside, like when I go to the mall and stuff, and the poinsettias at Christmas time and all that. And they're in pots, right? I mean, you don't grow them there.
No. You normally, like someone like me, I don't grow the plant material that I install. Mm-hmm. I buy that from a broker or I locate it for a client. And then I install it.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting job. Let's ask a couple of questions. Why should we even have houseplants?
Well, there is a wonderful website that can give you more information on this. It's called Green Plants for Green Buildings. And it was started kind of as an interior landscaper got milk campaign. But there have been scientific studies by a gentleman by the name of Bill Wolverton, who found that when he put water lilies in the ponds that they had at Nassau to see if they could remove ancient orange, the water lilies did so.
Oh my gosh.
He thought this was interesting enough that he thought, well, I wonder if we put plants inside and measured the toxins in the air before and then measured them after, if there would be a difference. So they actually set up like a mobile home, in a sense, that was a manufactured home that had no windows. It was all ventilated air.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested the air for a variety of toxins and came up with about 100.
Oh,
and the only thing they introduced were plants. And then they tested the air again, and the toxins were removed.
So they watered them and they had light in there and everything. The plant
yes,
would do
did.
Fine in there. And then, well, that's terrific.
So really one of the best air filters that you can have in your home is an interior plant. That is scientifically proven.
And so not just, I mean, I always used to have African violets, and every year I wind up not taking care of them as well as I should in the summer, and they don't do very well. But so would it be like a larger plant would be more effective, or are there just certain plants that are more effective?
Well, if you go on to that site, and also you can go on to my website, personalplantservice.com, and I do have listings there of plants that are known for being more effective. It is not just the leaves of the plant, it's actually how the plant breaks down, and it's the process of photosynthesis that actually helps with the toxin removal.
Mm-hmm.
But pothos are a great one, Chinese evergreens are great ones, dracaenas are great ones. Those are fairly common plants you can get at most any nursery or big box store in town.
So, oh, wow. Well, that's real handy.
And a lot of them actually will have labels on there that will tell you it's a clean air plant.
Oh, there. No kidding.
Back in the early 80s, Bill Warburton's original name for when he was doing his search, it was called plants for green air, mm-hmm. and then it changed. So that studies have been going on since the 80s, and that's kind of when I jumped into the interior landscaping. I started my company in 82. It's still a fairly young industry, though interior plants have been around since Egyptian days. I mean, they were courtyard plants, and they were orchards that were grown on the inside of the courtyards.
Oh, sure.
And often, you know, citrus trees had to be moved inside during the winter time.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, and I remember even in the greenhouses in England, I know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and then when people came over to the United States, they had a lot of greenhouses. I've been to Longwood in Pennsylvania, and it just, you know, it's just acres and acres.
Acres and acres.
Beautiful. And there's citrus, and they got cactus and all kinds of stuff. That's what they had to do back
then,
if they wanted to get them to grow.
Exactly. So, you know, we have to realize, being in California, that we are blessed. And to have a very long growing season throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, you know, have relied on interior plants to bring green inside.
You know, we
forget that there's people that live in the area that there is no green for the entire winter. Interior plants, you know, can really, you know, be beneficial on so many different levels for people. I enjoy them because I think they soften. For one, they're a fairly inexpensive way to really create a design that's unique in your home.
And it can help reduce stress, too.
Absolutely. It helps me a lot.
I just like working with plants. And they can be inside or outside.
Outside or whatever. I do find that a lot of master gardeners do tend to be more exterior gardeners. We're all going to have things we love.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to have our bents toward our favorite things.
Mm-hmm. Most people have some type of plant inside. I mean, most people do. And that's why I've got you here, because I want us to be able to do a better job of keeping them and maintaining them and growing them. So one of the other things that you suggested was to have them in office situations.
Absolutely.
And how does that help people in the offices?
Oh. I do a very large commercial building that I've actually had the privilege of working for almost my entire plant career.
Mm.
I think I've been in the business about 38 years, and I think I've worked for them about 28, I know, because I went to work for them right after my son was born, and he turns 29 next month. It's amazing how once your children are born, everything is based upon how old they were.
Sure.
You know? And they really love the interior plants, and I do all the interior plants on two floors. I have a planter area that you see right when you walk in. I have two living walls, and I created an actual community patio that use a lot for parties. I do all their in-ground color and their pots. Went to pick up my check for my holiday decor, and their receptionist goes, "Our place looks so beautiful. Thank you." So there are numerous studies that show, and if you watch any new companies that are being put in with millennials and the younger crowd, they want to make their working environment a place they want to be. If you could be in a place like we are, where you can, you know, have a view and have windows and have greenery, I would say probably the majority of people you would talk to would prefer that,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to not.
Yep.
Interior landscape just enhances that.
And that's perfect. So you have a system on where to put them and what you do with them all. And it's called clever name, plants. A plant system. So the first category is a placement. So can you tell me about why that would even be important?
The way that you will be a successful gardener is you get the right plant in the right spot. Now, will you have those oddities? Of course you will. But if you're going to put a fern in full sun, you're not going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to put a succulent in a closet, you're not going to be successful. So it's what I would encourage people to do is find a plant that you like. We all have plants we're drawn to.
Yeah.
Then create the environment that either that plant wants. So if you like that enough, then give that plant the spot that it wants.
Yep.
If you have a spot that you need to fill and you want a plant, but it's a darker spot, then just get a plant that will live in that spot.
Yes.
Most regular nurseries will have someone on staff that is educated. Big box, you don't know. That's probably why they offer you a return, because you're not really getting advice. So there is a lot, but I have taught a college course in this, and I often have my students have to learn 40 or 50 names, and they have to be able to tell me what water and light they need. And there is discrepancies. So if you're out and about, let's say you're out at a library or you're out at the mall, or you're, especially if you're in someone's home, and you see a plant that's really flourishing and you like it, take note of what that environment is giving that plant, and then try to give that plant that environment.
Yeah, I have, and I'm, I tend to buy plants and that I like, and then I bring them home, and I go, okay, and then I read the back of the label. It says, you know, full sun or part shade or whatever it says. They at least give you some information, but and I put things in the ground and watered them and did everything I was supposed to do, or so I thought. And my husband, who goes, but you're a master gardener, he says, that plant's dying out there. I says, yes, it is. I says, it's either in the wrong place, or I'm giving it too much water, or I just not, you know, it's just not going to make it there. And, you know, just because I'm a master gardener doesn't mean everything lives. Some things die, and sometimes that's how you have to learn. So even if you're putting things in your home, I just found out as I was putting my poinsettias out that they like full sun. And so if you've got them in your house, you're going to want to put them in a special place where it gets a lot of sun.
They do like a lot of light, and they don't like a lot of heat, and they don't like their feet wet.
Yeah, and
they don't
so
like to be in water.
So getting ready for Christmas, I had to think, okay, now this is another plant.
What you were saying is you made a spontaneous purchase, and how many of us have done that going into a store where something just catches our eye?
Oh,
trust
for sure.
Me, they count on you to do that. But there's a difference between, and the reason I put placement in as the P in the acronym was because when people are coming to me, they're making a sizable investment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't discourage spontaneous purchases because I still do them all the time.
Well, and you can
That's
transplant, right?
And, you know, don't we all buy cut flowers too?
Sure.
You know, so even a spontaneous purchase that you would make of a potted plant would probably equally give you as much time as a cut flower was. You know, so we don't have to feel like every interior plant we buy has to be, you know, long living forever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to make, I'm speaking to you as a plant designer, if you're going to make a sizable investment, let's say a Raphis palm for interior can cost you $350.
Mm.
And then you add a $250 pot, you're talking $700. Let's give that palm what that palm wants to be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, sometimes you'll go into commercial buildings and you will see the plants declining or not looking well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they do put Raphis palms in elevator areas that have 50-foot candles. And what we as plant companies have to do is replace them. But we charge them according to that.
Sure.
So they are used, sadly, for that. But you, are, as a homeowner or a master gardener, you want it to be successful.
Right.
So the things we just put down there is, what do you want the plant to do? Is it going to literally cover wires? Or is it going to be front and center when someone comes in your front door?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so think about what it is. What's the purpose?
Yeah.
What's the purpose? So the P could be placement and purpose, but it makes a difference in what you buy.
So, and it makes a difference what side of the house, like if it's an east or a west
Absolutely.
Window.
So, just like your exterior garden.
So how would I know what to put in an east or a west window? How would I know?
Well, one, you're going to find that you're obviously your north-facing side is going to be your shadiest side of your house, also the shadiest. So your north side is going to be where you would put your darker plants, your dracaenas, your Chinese evergreens, your pothos.
Something that doesn't need as much light.
Exactly. Think about interior plants were what grew under the canopies of the trees in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
Because the canopies were so dense that the light was hardly filtering in. So that's what interior plants were meant to do. It's actually more difficult to find an interior plant that will thrive in a really bright area because of the heat.
Hmm.
I would like to ask you, would you, on one of these warm summer days we have, love to stand in a west-facing window for 8 hours a day?
With the sun shining on you.
Right. Would you like that? You know, and what I try and tell people is plants, really interior plants, like very much the same temperature conditions we like, they're tropicals, most of them, mm-hmm. so they're not going to want to go below 35 or above 90.
And it's surprising when
Chinese evergreens freeze inside a commercial building.
Oh my gosh!
They turn the HVAC system off in the summer.
Oh,
well, I mean in the weekends to conserve energy.
Oh,
but
my.
I've actually gone in and had damage from cold. I've had clients that leave their homes. I'm still allowed to come in, but they're not living there. They turn their heat off, or it's hot in the summertime. And you can have an outbreak of spider mites take over in a home if you don't have ventilation. So that kind of goes into our next plants would be L. We have PL, and that would stand for light.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most important factor for plants because without light, your plants can't photosynthesize.
Sure.
And without photosynthesizing, they don't make food. Without food, they die. It's just bottom. There's something for the interior plants called, it's called the light compensation point. And what that means is the plant has to receive enough light that it's gaining new leaves at a higher rate than it's losing its old leaves, or it will just be in a slow decline to death.
So we can kind of tell if new growth is coming, then it's in a good place.
Right, because initially you are going to lose some leaves because all plants, most interior plants are grown in Florida, or Hawaii, or California. They're grown to reach a certain size at a certain time, so that grower makes money.
Mm-hmm.
So they will normally water it a lot, feed it a lot, give it a lot of light, and then you bring it home and put it on your dining room table and wonder why it doesn't like that. And I often will tell my students, how many of you like to move? And no one raises their hand. Who enjoys moving, really?
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, plants have just moved. I said, they were just basking, having, you know, Mai Tais in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And now they've put on some, you know, boxcar or plane, brought over here, or big box store, or a nursery, and then brought to you probably within a month's span of time. And then we wonder why they show some signs of stress. And so what do we normally do? What would you normally do if you were seeing a plant that you just bought showing
You'd think
stress?
It must be, I'm not watering it enough.
Right. And that's normally the worst thing you can do. Now, they will have watered it, so what I try and explain to people is they have to acclimate. That's what that word acclimate means. They got to get used to their new home. So they've had a lot of water, they've had a lot of light, they've had really regulated temperatures, and now they've been moved around by who knows who, they've been put in your car and brought home, and now they're in shock. So if you were to give them anything, you could give them a vitamin B1 or a Super Thrive. Those are two really good products.
Mm.
You don't want them to go too dry, but you want to slowly wean them. Because you can get an interior plant down to only needing water every 10 to 14 days.
Huh.
This once a week thing is craziness. And people in the business, I service most of my accounts every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Not every week.
So do you ever use like those moisture meter things?
I use a soil probe, which is what we use as a Master Gardener, but it's a smaller version.
Right.
You can get them about 12 inches long, and I prefer the ones that are made of metal as opposed to plastic.
Yeah.
Because they hold up better. They take the best core readings of plants that are bigger than 10 inches or above.
Mm.
Little silly to use for a 6 or an 8 inch because you literally could look at the top of the soil or pick the weight of the plant up to
sure.
determine. But you get bigger and then you get where someone like me where I'm watering hundreds of plants in a day. I don't necessarily want to guess, especially on my large specimens, because if I probe that and I go down 12 inches and that soil moisture meter is moist on that lower level, I know I don't need to water.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So you do want to be observant, but I'm not saying a moisture meter. The ones that you see where they have the thin and you put them in and they tell you wet or dry,
mm-hmm.
if you were to put that, and I challenge all of you Master Gardeners to do this, if you put it in distilled water, it's going to register dry.
Really?
Hmm. Because it's not registering moisture. It's registering salt content.
Oh.
So when the plant dries up, your salt levels go up, and that's going to more register it.
Mm, okay. Wow.
So the very best tool you have are your eyes. Looking at your plant, it will communicate to you. Looking at the topsoil, your hands,
Yeah, I used to do the finger test. Yeah. Stick it down to the first knuckle, and if it feels like it's damp, then you've got water in there.
That's right.
So it's not just looking at the top of the soil to tell. That's not a good way.
Often I think tools are good as long as we look at them as tools.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one of my words that I don't like within the industry is when they use the word self-watering container. When that's not really what they do, they don't put the water in themselves.
No.
I call them sub-irrigation, because what they are is a tool that if you do have a rapist palm in a very nice home that you can't get into all the time, then it's really good to sub-irrigate that palm, because if it goes too dry, that's going to cost you $350 out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. If you put it in a sub-irrigation pot, it's going to have a reservoir of water on that, and they thrive in that.
So for a home garden who has maybe just smaller plants in there, what would be an example? Like maybe, like when I used to do African violets, I would have stones with water in there and put my pots in there. Would that be an example of that?
There are actual sub-irrigation pots now, though, that mm-hmm. you would then remove them from their grow pot and you would transfer them into the sub-irrigation.
So there's like a reservoir in the bottom, right?
I will just ask you, would we need to do that for a snake plant?
No.
No, because you hardly ever water the things in the first place.
Yeah.
Would you do it for a spathiphyllum or a peace lily?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Absolutely, because
they
those
just keep blooming.
Water,
yeah.
See?
That's right.
So it's just a tool that helps you with certain plants.
Mm-hmm.
I personally sub-irrigate almost all the palms on my accounts because I don't always have control over what's happening in that environment when I'm not there. It's not my home. I'm coming in maybe an hour every 2 weeks. So if it's an area that's a bright or where I need to control that water, then I will tend to use the sub-irrigation as a tool.
And you don't think about that, I mean, being in your own home. I mean, I don't have any interior palms, so I don't have a big enough house with two-story atrium or anything in mind. So most of mine are just houseplants, small, either vines or I've got some snake plants I'm just putting in.
Well, let me give you an example of it. Let's say you're going to go on a vacation
mm-hmm.
and you do have all these 6 or 8 inch houseplants. You're thinking, oh, what am I going to do about my plants? You know, are they going to make it? Well, there's, in our industry, we call it capillary mat. you can just to get some white felt. And what we do as interior scapers is you can either get a saucer or you can cut strips of it and you would run those strips up into the root ball of the plant through the hole in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could elevate that plant either, let's say, outside or even in your bathroom. You could put some either Ways plastic containers where you could elevate it. You could put just an inch or two of water in your bathtub. You could run those
just
as wicks.
Sucks it right up,
and
right?
They would just absorb the water as you needed it.
Right.
So that's where what we've done for interiors, let's say we have a large tree that we don't have to water every 2 weeks, but we have 6-inch underplantings. Let's say pull those. They're not going to necessarily make it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll put a cap mat underneath them. And then we just put a little bit more water in the saucer, deep saucer,
mm-hmm.
and that will train those.
Yeah.
So they're just tricks of the trade.
Yeah.
But the capillary mat, literally, it's just white felt that is a water. How many of you have bought poinsettias that you see in the little tiny square, and it's got that little tiny string coming out of it?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's a wicking system.
Yeah.
So just think of that.
And it just sucks it up from the bottom when it needs it, so the roots actually will pull from that. Right?
Exactly.
And they just kind of grow around and they go, ooh, water, oh, I'm going there. And that's really a good thing. So I know because I grow violets that I have tried different type of lighting to make sure that they want to continue to bloom all the time. So I'm really forcing them to bloom all the time. And so I know that there's different qualities of lighting, cool white, fluorescent. How do we know what kind of light to use with our indoor plants? So do we have to have a specific kind for each one? Or?
That's a good question. Just so you know, most codes, if you're in a home or a building, if you can put your hand 1 foot above that surface, table, floor, and you can see the shadow of your hand, then you've probably got 100-foot candles. And that would be considered low light, but decent light for most plants to survive.
Huh.
And on my website, I've kind of put my 4 top low light plants, mm-hmm. my 4 top medium light plants, And again, I just want to stress, it's actually more difficult to find interior plants that will thrive in a lot of light than ones that will thrive in lower light, because you then have the heat factor. And when you add the heat factor, then you sometimes add the insect factor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are lots of light meter reading apps.
Oh, no kidding.
On your phones now. So you could just scroll whatever phone you have and say light meter readings, and they would take light meter readings of the area that you want.
So you just put it like right where you're above your plant, just right next to it.
Right.
Facing the light source, right? And it'll tell me.
Right. Now keep in mind that you would then have a morning, midday, and evening.
But you would
get an average of saying, it's a good way to train your eye.
Uh-huh.
To know, oh, I wonder what that lighting is. Then if you were to go to, I would recommend people to either contact a professional like myself, because surprisingly, we're really not that much more expensive than if you drive around and try and figure that out and buy the wrong plant.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to a nursery, take a picture of the area and say, I'm looking for a 3-foot plant that will be this wide. And they may not have it there, but often they can tell you what a plant would be and order it for you.
Oh, sure.
So don't just be limited to what you see. They often can find it for you.
But and they have
access. Space
is so
valuable in California.
That's right.
We can't just carry everything.
Yeah.
There's tons of growers down in the Vista and Carlsbad area.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be delayed. So know that nursery staff is normally trained. That's where I started years ago, was at a nursery, and my boss encouraged me to start my company.
Huh.
So just realize, take a picture. If you can do a light meter reading, take that person as much information as you can, rather than, I need a green plant for my living room.
Yeah.
It doesn't give them. Think about exterior. They're going to say, sun or shade? Do you want color? How tall? It's the same thing. You've got to give them the same information as you would for exterior, and a lot of people just don't think of it that way.
I know. When I got here, I said, so I'm looking for some plants, because I came from Michigan, so I didn't know that much. And I said, so what zone are we in? And he says, well, what city do you live in? What side of the mountain do you live on? What side of the street do you live on? Because we have so many microclimates here, and I'm sure in our house too, because of having the different facing windows, that they were all different. And I didn't realize that, because Michigan, we have one. That's it. And everything grows just fine. But so that was a real eye-opener for me. So we're going to take a minute right now. I have to take a break. Time really went fast so far. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to KUCI.org. This is the In the Garden Show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. And I'm Sally Richards, your DJ for the hour. And we are talking about indoor plant gardening. And my guest is Deb Ringler. And so we've been talking about indoor plants right now. We just got done with where to place them, what to think about when we're placing our plants, what type of light and light sources. So now we're going to talk about climate and what types of climates we have in our house and good placement for that.
Well, we were talking about the different locations in your, you know, window areas. You know, you have to realize the north side's going to be cooler. My ficuses grow well outside on the north side. So they tend to not like the, you know, full sun type area coming through a window. But the new Ficus lauratus everybody loves, they love sun coming through a window.
Huh.
You know? So just keep in mind that climates inside, we go, wow, it's really cold out there in the winter. But when you come in the house, we're all cranking our heaters. So keep in mind, the winter time, there's very low humidity inside your home, because most of us will start kicking our heaters on in January, February, March. Rest of the time, we're fine. We do have Santa Ana winds.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we put poinsettias in, you got to have a Santa Ana wind the week before Christmas. When you can't get any more. Sun coming through a window. But the A in the plant acronym that we were talking about was the acclimation process. A lot of us just don't realize the plants have to get used to their new home.
Mm-hmm.
Depending upon whether they're a fast-growing plant or a slow-growing plant will determine upon how long does that acclimation process take. So let me give an example. Pothos, pretty quick, because they're fast-growing. They are going to lose some yellow leaves in the crown, because mm-hmm. when you get a pothos or an ivy plant originally, they have a really full head on them.
Right.
But let's just say you're going to bring it in your home. You're likely not going to be able to give the crown of that plant the amount of light it needed for them to grow it to that level. Hmm. So what is that plant going to need to do in order to survive?
It needs more light.
Or it's going to shed, right?
Yeah.
Because it's got to shed some, because if it can't maintain them, but is that bad necessarily? Not really.
No.
If they can replace them faster, then they lose them. And that's where in that acclimation process, what you need to do is provide them with as much light as you possibly can. You want to give them what you'd call their optimal light. And then you want to wean them slower on water, because they've been given a lot of water. Mm-hmm. And don't ever fertilize a new plant, because they've already been given a lot of fertilizer. In fact, one thing I always point out in my classes is you'll often see, especially on rafuses or palms and dracaenas, there'll be osmocote, which almost looks like caviar.
Yeah, those little round pellets.
Little round.
Yeah.
Now, what they do is, because that is a slow-release fertilizer, mm-hmm. when their growers are just doing those by the handfuls, and then we come in and we slow the water down and we put it in a much lower light environment, but we still keep all that fertilizer on there. And fertilizer just means salt.
Mm.
That's what the plant reads it as. So if that plant isn't getting the amount of water it needs, and it's now not actively growing, but now every time you water it, you've still got all of that fertilizer on there, you're going to start getting brown tips, you're going to start getting salt burn, because that plant is not utilizing that fertilizer, because it's really not actively growing, it's just surviving.
So then what do you recommend?
I lean the plant over and I remove as much of that as I can, because the plant isn't going to need it, and if it is going to need fertilizer, I want to control what it's going to get. By doing a liquid, or once I know what the plant needs.
And it'll take a little while.
It will take a little while.
To acclimate that.
You won't need to, we don't feed interior plants unless they're actively growing,
mm-hmm.
you're watering them on a very regular basis, and it's between the months of April and November in California.
Hmm. And so in our houses, we'll have dry areas. Obviously, the heat vents come on, it blows, it gets dry. But do we ever have places in our house that would be a humid area that we would have for plants?
Well, your bathroom areas, a lot of homes in this area have, you know, windows, or they have, you know, larger bathroom areas.
Uh-huh.
But humidity is really not something for interior plants that we really can control. And I'm only there, seriously, a very small portion of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not able to control the environment. It's probably the best thing you could do is group plants. Because if you group plants together, they create humidity
among each
other.
Ah,
so
that's a good idea.
Obviously, if you have an entryway or you have a larger room, you know, try and group them in a corner together. That's kind of what I've done by a window. They'll create their own humidity that way,
too.
Oh,
that's a great idea. Yeah.
Misting really doesn't do anything. I mean, you can mist it if it makes you feel better. But unless the air itself is going to be humid, it would help. But, do we all have time to stand around and mist our plants?
I know. And the orchids was another one for me. I was putting them in pebbles and stuff to keep that water level, to try to keep the humidity there for the orchids.
It can help, but, you know, does it really raise it up to the level that it would make a difference?
And mine actually did better outside than they did inside.
You know.
So, yeah.
I guess if I really wanted to add humidity, I would buy a humidifier. I mean, that would probably truly add the most effective humidity.
And then that takes away all the dryness of the air that would be in your house.
So we've gone through, P was for placement, and pretty much you have to make sure that through that placement that you are giving that plant what would be optimal light, or as much light as you can give it. But remember, light doesn't mean heat.
Right.
So you have to be aware of what plants could take sun through a window.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to be aware you're now bringing a plant that's had its everything it wants optimal, because that grower is not going to make money till that plant leaves their nursery. So they're going to give that plant everything of that plant that needs, and now you're maybe putting it in a compromised area, or probably less than perfect conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give that plant time to recover from the shock of that.
Right.
And so through that, give it light. If the plant is either really dense, you can thin it out. You want light to get down into the plant.
Mm-hmm.
You want to clean it. You want to make sure your plants are clean. Now, does cleaning mean you spray polish on it? because that's not cleaning. Castile soap is beautiful to clean plants. Take a teaspoon and a quart of water. That'll clean it just fine. Cleaning is not the same as polishing.
No.
Because polishing is for orchids or for color plants or something that you want to pop or pothos. But it's not meant to clean plants. That's not what we use it for. I use a product that's very expensive, but I use it in high volume.
Right.
Most people, I just say, just get Castile soap. You can buy it at any normal store. You can even get I like peppermint and lavender because it makes me feel good. And plants just want to be clean. Do they want to be rubbed? No, they just want to be clean. How often do you test your house for dust? Maybe once a week, twice a week. Your plants are getting all of that dust too. So that's a way that we block the light. It might be near a window, but how much tinting is on the window?
Yep.
How dark is the room? Is it a dark brown? Is it a light room?
Should we look at the plants that we want to dust and clean, the smooth-leaved ones? Because I don't think you do that like with a violet, right?
No, not with a violet that's got more of a hairy leaf or more of a textured leaf. But you can gently put on... How many of you have socks out there that have no mates anywhere? Literally, you can just... We truly spend more time cleaning our plants than watering our plants.
Wow.
So you need to get out of the mindset that interior plants take a lot of maintenance, because they really don't. But they require consistency. How many of us buy them but then just forget to water them?
Yeah.
I'm guilty of that myself.
Or they look, ooh, looks like I should water that one.
Right.
That happens.
We don't do it consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So pick a day, do it consistently. Give them the light they want. Find out what they want in regards to water. I'm going to give you a tip for water, because we're going into nutrients as being our N for our plant acronym. And a lot of people immediately think, well, nutrients has got to be fertilizer, and that is not the case. Your first level of nutrients for the plant is water. So you want to wait. Never use soft water, because what does that have in it?
Salt.
Salts. So never want to use. I learned that by not asking a client and watering her three Kentias with soft water when I was a young buck in this industry, and that cost me a lot of money.
So how do you get it so it doesn't have salt?
Let's say if you went to a location and you weren't sure, always get your water from outside, because you know they're never going to pump soft water to the exterior hose lines. So that's what I tell my technicians. If you don't know, always get the water from outside. Don't get it from the kitchen sink or the laundry sink. To the next area for nutrients for soil plants is soil. We don't think about that, but you'll know that if you get anything from Hawaii, it's going to be in lava rock, because they got a lot of it. It's cheap, and they can have rain and water a lot, and it's going to go right through. But how does that affect you when you have a rafus palm that's planted strictly in lava rock, and then you put it in a warm conference room? So you have to determine, is that plant with that soil base that it got? What we would do is either put it in a sub-irrigation container, or we would add soil to it. When you use soil for interior plants, it has to be labeled for interior plants. And the reason for that is you don't want any amendments in there. You want it to be clean, sterilized soil that doesn't have anything in there. No grow molds, no nitrohumus, no manure, nothing. It's just a sterilized soil base. It's basically a soil.
Because we're going to put our own fertilizer in there, right?
Right. But it's mainly that you just want to make sure that it's not garden dirt, that it's not the field dirt that you buy at a big box store. There will be cactus mixes is a real good one for interior plants as well. So make sure that you ask them. And it says on the label that it's meant for interior plants.
And the interesting thing is, if you buy, even if you're buying one quart plants to put outside, I find that they plant them in all kinds of stuff.
Yes, they do.
I'll find some that it's mostly peat moss in there, and they'll have some that it will actually be very compacted soil in there. And it's all different. And if you're going to be working with something in your house, it'd be better to be more consistent, I would think, to have the same types of soil so that you'll know how that soil is going to react to when you're going to water it or fertilize it or whatever.
Well, shipping's become very expensive. And I'll give you a good example. Orchids do best if they're planted, I think, with a pretty strong bark mix. It allows them to aerate. We know that orchids are epiphytes, so they don't even need soil to live. And now they've started packing them all in sphagnum moss.
Yeah.
Which does nothing but keep them soaking wet. but it's cheaper. And then they don't get under stress in the shipment process.
Yes.
So it changed our industry because we can't control that. Now, would it be worth me as an interior scaper to then repot all of my orchids, rip all that sphagnum moss, and then repot them? No. Would it be worth it for you as a homeowner? Possibly, but I would let them get through their blooming cycle that you bought them for.
Yes. Yeah.
And then make sure that they've acclimated to the area and then transplant. Just make sure that they're, you know, they've gone through so much already.
Yeah.
Give them a chance to get used to their new home.
And, you know, if they really, you can kind of tell when you're looking at them. And I will pull my orchids out and look at the roots. And if you see that they're all brown and just really, you know, they look like your shriveled up fingers, you know that those aren't in good health.
That's right. Exactly.
And you need to get those out of there. So a lot of times you can pull an orchid out and you can see them right there in front of you that this thing is just not nice and plump and the way it should be and that it needs to be transplanted. And that's a good one that's a tip I found out for orchids. So one of the things that roots also need, and I know a lot of people don't realize this, is they have to have air.
They do. And, you know, that's why plants die from overwatering.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't the water. It's that you've now taken all the air out of the roots,
yeah.
And then they suffocate. So let's just finish up what the nutrients. Obviously, I do fertilize, and I really want to just mainly share with our listeners what the formula is that I use and why I would choose that formula.
Okay.
Interior plants like what you would call a 3-2-1 formula. The formula that I use is a 9-3-6. So whenever you look on a fertilizer container, there will always be three numbers. The first number is always nitrogen,
mm-hmm.
which you would think that interior plants would want.
Right.
Because that's what's going to give them their green growth.
Yep.
The middle number that you see is for phosphorus, and that's for blooms. So you really don't want to encourage, though interior plants do bloom,
right.
You don't want to encourage that. Because you're not trying to reproduce them, and then the structure of the plant changes drastically once they bloom. Then the last number that you pick is for potassium, which is for strong root growth. So you do want that. So a 9-3-6, you could divide that by 3,
mm-hmm.
right? It would be a 3. 3 into 9 is 3.
Yep.
3 into 3 is 1. 3 into 6 is 2. So it's a 3-1-2 formula. Very good. Never fertilize a plant that's dry or under stress. So like I said, actively growing, you're watering it a lot, and the plant will obviously need fertilizer because it's utilizing it. Plant that's being watered rarely in a dark spot is not actively growing. Fertilizer is going to make no difference.
Yeah, and besides that, it'd probably be they're not absorbing very much as it is because they're trying to store all the water that they can even find. And so now you're going to induce another stressor for them to try to fertilize something where they can't absorb it as well if they had nice strong roots that were maintained. Yeah.
So the best thing you can do when you bring a plant home is just try to eliminate as much of the stress that's come from its shipping and all of that, and just let it be, and just make sure you're consistent with watering. Don't let it get too dry, and just give it a couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
and then decide.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the poor thing alone and just let it get used.
Yeah,
to it.
Get no, used to the new place.
Don't forget about watering.
And you can talk to it too if you want.
Can.
Yeah.
It's very good to talk. So our last one, I think, well, we're not two. We have T stands for temperature, and that's a real easy one. Plants pretty much like this interior plants, very much like the same temperature we as people do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're feeling a little nippy in your house, like I have recently when my thermostat broke and my house was very cold,
no.
And it was Thanksgiving and we had no heater, my living room plants were feeling the nip, so
yeah.
I was burning fires.
Mm.
They like the same temperature range, about 40 to 85,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we do. And then the last part of our acronym is symptoms of stress. So how do you know that your plant is stressed? Well, we all know yellow leaves. That's going to tell you too much water, too little. But it's all that is the only way a plant can tell you anything. Is the structure of their leaves.
Oh, and today I looked at my poinsettias and I went, oh no, they need water. I can tell they're just looking real sad.
So if anything, interior plants make you be aware of your environment inside,
mm-hmm.
and get something that you enjoy. Don't overwhelm yourself. Just get one or two plants you like and then let it go from there. They do, so temperature is one. Light levels, if they're not getting the light they need, you know their growth will become oblong.
Mm-hmm.
Or
they get leggy.
Or stunted. Yep. Sometimes. Or you have phototropism where they're plastering themselves against the window because you haven't been rotating.
Yeah, that's right.
So just be aware, light is your biggest factor. So how can you utilize that light?
Sorry. And also the thing is when you've got the light coming in, besides turning your plants, if you don't have enough light, the plant will actually shoot towards the light. It will get leggy as it's trying to reach the light.
So we've talked about acclimating and water quality. We talked about making sure that you don't use soft water. Fluoride can be a problem. Periodically, if you've had an older plant and maybe you're starting to see it, it doesn't hurt to leach them.
So explain leaching. What is leaching?
Leaching would be, one, if you ever take your interior plants out to clean them or let's say maybe do a spring cleaning, don't do it in the full sun. Do mm-hmm. it out in the shade or do it in the morning time. It does not take long at all for an interior plant to show some burn damage from being in the full sun. When you're leaching a plant, you're basically going to try and remove any of the salts that maybe have accumulated. So you would do it normally with a plant that's a little bit older,
uh-huh.
not a new plant.
Yeah.
Or a plant that possibly has shown signs of being over-fertilized.
Mm-hmm.
So you just take tepid water that you know is not treated with anything, and you fill the plant up and you let the water run, and you just do that several times, and then you just let the plant stay until it's fully drained, and then you would put it back into its decorative container inside.
So those salts just are very soluble, and they just...
And they will just
go
be
right out.
Leached right out, but you want to do enough water where you're actually leaching the salts.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen plants where there actually has a little white residue on the top, and
yes.
then I know it's really bad.
Yes.
So take that off.
You can actually remove the soil. And also, if whenever you remove any of the fertilizer I was encouraging you to do, you can just backfill that with, you know, good potting soil
mm-hmm.
that's for interior plants. Just make sure you never bring that level up on the cane of the plant, just like you would for exterior plants.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Same level
so
as this planet.
So there's insects that attack plants. And I would say, probably the number one that people don't see soon enough that can cause a lot of damage to plants is spider mites.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to hit palms a lot. Crotons, get them, Neanthobella palms. They are spiders. They are arachnids. They are not insects. They do create a new generation every couple of days.
Oh.
So if it goes unnoticed, then you can really cause a lot of damage, and they do spread pretty easily, which is why we don't use feather dusters to dust plants.
Because
to me, that just is spreading condominiums of insects everywhere around.
Oh.
So we tend to use either the socks, something we can clean,
uh-huh.
sponges, soft cloths.
So what would be a symptom of a spider mite?
Spider mites look like you took a small pin and you just poked holes, not holes that go through, but it actually removes the chlorophyll. The spider mites have a sucking mouth part that removes the chlorophyll in the leaf, and
mm-hmm.
you have to have the chlorophyll in order to photosynthesize,
right.
in order to grab that sunlight. So they're removing that, so the plant will just get weaker and
so
weaker.
So do you
and
see webs?
Kind of a silver look, yes. And if you're unsure, you literally could just take a spray bottle with just plain water and spray that top part, and if you saw webbing, you got spider mites.
And then how about gnats?
Fungus gnats is another problem that we've dealt with. If plants are kept too moist,
mm-hmm.
it will start causing the soil that the plant is in to decompose. And that often can be a wonderful breeding ground for an insect called a fungus gnat, which makes you feel like you're camping inside your home. And I'll tell you, when you have a commercial building that calls you and says they're having problems with fungus gnats, you get out there right away because it really irritates people working on computers
if they
feel like they're camping.
And so they just sort of fly around
too? They will only travel normally 6 to 8 feet from their host plant.
Mm.
So you can put yellow strips down to if you need to identify. What I do is remove the first 1 or 2 inches of that soil because that's normally where their eggs are.
Mm.
And that you're removing a good portion of the eggs just by doing that.
Yep.
You can put a little bit of horticultural diatomaceous earth
uh-huh.
lightly down, which is going to dry out the rest of that soil. Then I put a little bit of horticultural sand. Now, that's not play sand from Home Depot or a big box store. It's decorative horticultural sand that you would get if you're going to do a terrarium.
Yeah.
That kind of a sand. It's a little bit
more. So it just keeps it so the water
it does,
goes
and then,
through.
And then you can then put a little bit more soil on top of there. And then they can't burrow up through that.
Oh.
And that is the way that I've done it without using any chemicals.
Oh, that's
and
really
it's
good.
It's been very effective. And then you just try and not overwater. Mealybugs is another one that you see. Most people can identify those a little bit easier than the spider mites because they're small. They're normally covered with a white coating that normally will leave a sticky residue on things, and they're very slow growing. So normally what you can do is if you can remove the plant, if it's not too large, take it outside where you can spray it down pretty well with that Castile soap, a teaspoon in a spray bottle, and moisten those, and then you can gently spray that. And the point is try to remove as many of the insects as you can before you would bring it in the home. Because and then if you any of the moss or any of the pot that you have it in has any of that residue, put new moss down, clean that. The main thing is try to create an arena that the insects aren't going to feel welcome.
Yep. The one I have the most trouble with, I know it's farther down the list, are whitefly. Because we're, we get a lot of the ocean breezes coming in. It gets moist. We're up on a hill, so sometimes we are in a cloud.
Okay.
And so I, my hibiscus perennial whitefly problems all the time.
I have heard, now I haven't done it inside, but I have heard that if you put worm castings down at the base of plants that are struggling with whitefly, that the plant absorbs from the worm castings that makes them not taste good to the whitefly. So I don't know if you were talking about an interior.
Yep. Well, when I do, well, my outside ones, I can actually spray them with water.
I probably could do the same.
Sure.
But you just would always want to do it in the shade.
Yeah, get it out of the area there. And scale is another one that is another problem that we've got. And so what does that look like?
Scales looks very much like mealybugs. If you were to wipe off the white cottony material that normally protects them. And the scale actually has a hard
like a
coat
shell
on
thing,
it.
Yeah.
Little more difficult to get to them because that normally means that's an adult and it's hard to penetrate that. So the best thing you can do is try and remove them by spraying them off. Also, you can spray interior plants with rubbing alcohol. An orchid grower told me that, and I have done it, but it needs to be 70%. If you're aware, when you buy rubbing alcohol, that you can buy 50, 70, and 90%.
Yes.
And you can use that, but then I always do try to follow it up by the best thing you can do is spray something. I try to not use chemicals that will soften the exocote or exoskeleton, and then do something that would help remove the insect, be it, you know, washing it off with water, removing it with a paper towel, something like that. The best thing you can do to keep insects off your plants is properly water and keep them clean. And I found that after I survived cancer and we decided not to use any chemicals. And so we've cut down drastically because we just keep things pretty clean. And if you're, you know, if you're spending time and you're let's say you're spending maybe once a week looking at your plant, determining whether it needs to be cleaned or not, and then watering it the opposite plant. If you're just looking at them more regular, often we'll get an insect. It's because we really haven't been looking at them, and all of a sudden we go, oh, I'm so sorry. So if you're being attentive and you're watering correctly and keeping them clean, even for your exterior ones, hosing them, keeping them clean from debris helps really keep the insects down.
So we've got the insect part, so we've got to get to our biotic infections, fungi and bacteria.
That's a little more challenging for interior plants because you can't really control it. Unless you removed the soil from your new plant, you are pretty much having to deal with
whatever's
the grower
there.
Is. Now, do keep in mind that when you go to standard nurseries, those plants have to be inspected. They aren't allowed to be sold. So often they're inspected But sometimes viruses and funguses and bacteria hide within the soil and only come out unless you give them favorable conditions.
Uh-huh.
So you have to look at that disease triangle and know that then you have a certain plant that then can be prone to a certain pathogen if it's given certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bacteria, there's nothing you can do. You find out you have a bacteria in an interior plant, you just throw it away. There's nothing. Water funguses, Verisium, wilt, and different things, that's normally something you would take it back to a grower.
Oh, boy.
So I think homeowners or even master gardeners, we often blame ourselves if a plant dies.
Sure.
When sometimes we aren't always the cause. So I tell people, the way you get really good at growing plants is you kill a lot. And then you try and just not kill as many.
Right.
Because we're all going to... It's a learning curve. It's a journey. It's like anything else. Not going to go into it and be experts.
But a lot of people, I mean, if you keep your receipts, they'll say, you know, bring your plant back with your receipt and we will replace it for free or whatever they'll do. And nurseries are really good about that. But I found even the big box stores now
are
still doing it. So it's like you're a little bit of an insurance policy. And you're right. You think, well, I must have done something wrong because it was growing when I got it. So
right.
How could
and
it be dead
you
now?
You don't know. Truly, you don't know really what those plants have been through. When they are transported, they are given correct temperature because that would do more damage to them. But you know they're not given any light. So I just encourage people, start with something that's simple, that doesn't require a lot of water, that you enjoy, that will bring pleasure to your life. Put it in a place that you know that you'll watch it and take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just enjoy them. And really realize most interior plants can be weaned and trained to live off 10 to 14 days of water. What other chore do we do that we only have to do every day?
Yeah.
And how fun. Then you can give them to your bean charlies and wandering shoes back in the day.
Yeah, well, we're running out of time here, so I want to thank Deb for coming in and explaining a lot of this stuff of growing plants inside. That was really helpful, and especially that light meter idea. Okay, so you have a website, right?
I do.
Okay.
It's personalplantservice.com. Go to that website and ask me a question, and it will go to me via my email.
Okay, that's terrific. Or if you have any other types of questions about plants, inside or outside plants, we also have our hotline, Master Gardener Hotline. You can go to the Master Gardens for Orange County and look up our hotline. Send pictures, or those are always helpful if you've got a problem, and we'll get back with you too. So we've got a lot of resources here for us for planting here in Southern California. So thanks again, Deb.
You're very welcome.